when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Badass Women's Hour with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
Femba can go to hell.
Topical talk, outspoken opinion and inspirational conversation on the hour of badass power.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators but no one compares.
Minter, Campbell and Sexton are your all new Saturday night super squad. Badass Women's Hour on Talk Radio. She'll get you talking.
One, two, three.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour. Three women, 1 hour, all the opinions we can muster, and a whole load of badass here on Talk Radio. I'm Harriet Minter, and I'm joined by my co-host Emma Sexton, Natalie Campbell, and we'll be here with you for the next hour, sharing all our thoughts on the news and views this week. And we've got an amazing guest who's going to be telling us her Instagram secrets. And of course, we'll be doing our badass balls up, answering all your questions. But starting off this week, we're looking at the news that has really caught our attention and got us thinking. And we have a piece where we are saying, yay, Scotland. Scotland the brave. We're all packing our winter coats and moving up north. Nat, why is this?
This is because Scotland has finally responded to period poverty. And they are giving free tampons and pads to those in need.
So tell me, what do we mean when we talk about period poverty?
It's been covered in previous shows, but fundamentally there is a whole section of society that, because of the expense and cost of buying sanitary wear, they're missing out. And in some areas it means young girls are not going to school because they don't have any sanitary wear and they're bleeding. So the Scottish government have determined that they will start a six-month scheme to give free products to women and girls from low-income households in Aberdeen. They'll be handed out at selected locations, so schools, food banks, again, places where, you know, people can get to access these products, but probably other services too.
So I like to think that we have something to do with this, because we, a few months ago when we talked about this, we decided we'd launch a campaign, which didn't actually get around to launching. But I like to think that the thought went all the way
and
to
our
the
tweet.
Scottish government.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. But someone told me the other day that we spend, there was a figure that was out, that we spend about £18,000 in our lifetime on sanitary products as women.
Probably a lot more if you think about the range in cost. And when we were talking about it on the show, I was talking about my horror at spending £4 on a pack of like basic tampons, but I'd never really realised how much I was spending before. And I think the key thing here is that the Scottish government is saying, look, as a basic but necessary item, these things are fundamentally too expensive. And as part of a household shop, if you only got 50 quid a week or even less to feed a whole family, or as a young girl that doesn't have a job, where are you supposed to find this £4, or, you know, in most cases a lot more than that? So I think it's a good step in the right direction. I love the fact it's a pilot. It's only 6 months. Let's see what comes out of it, but it should be rolled out across the UK, and there are no plans to do that as yet.
No, and that's what I find really sad, is that nobody's actually taken that. When that report came out and it said that girls are not going to school because of this. So girls are not getting an education simply because they can't access sanitary wear. And nobody took that up. So well done, Scotland.
Should we do a new campaign? Free the pad.
Yeah, free the pad.
Hashtag free the
but
pad.
But also, you can still get condoms for free. You can go into any sexual health clinic and get free condoms. There should be a place where you can just go and get free sanitary wear, whether regardless of whatever.
But it should
you
be should the have same place. The same place exactly, that the boys can get things for their penises.
Yeah.
You know, free the pad.
Yeah. let's do that. So, Emma, what has been the news story that's caught your attention this week?
Well, it is, why do we still insist on calling women Miss or Mrs.? And with the recent death of the feminist Sheila Michaels, she was the lady that brought Ms., so just MS, to kind of the mainstream. But I have a real issue with all of this. Miss, because I've kind of reached that age now where people are like, oh, well, I don't think she's a miss, and I'm not sure she's a missus because I don't know if she's married. So they'll automatically default you to the MS. So, like, your bank cards. And I'm like, I don't want this in front of my name. If you're going to put something in front of my name, put doctor, put lady, not badass. Ms. Badass. I mean, I can give them a whole list of names and none of them would be Ms., Mrs. or Ms. What do you think, ladies?
So I don't really like Ms. either. And I find that really interesting because I feel like I should be all over it. I feel it's a feminist term. It was created so that we didn't have to define ourselves as married or not. But I also was just like, I don't even know why we have Mrs. Right? Yeah. Why do we have Mrs.? What would just be wrong with just being a Miss forever? Like, I could be a Miss forever. That's fine.
Yeah.
But also, why do we need them anyway?
Exactly.
At what point do I need to define my gender for you that I can't just tell you in person? Maybe if you're a doctor or hospital, I don't. Maybe then. But really, why do we need to have these words that go at the front of something to say, this is a boy person, this is a girl person?
It's so true.
Weird.
Because for my bank account, what difference does it make whether I'm male or female?
Yeah.
Like, really, it's totally irrelevant.
Just to say, that's the first time I've ever seen you get close to ghetto.
Have I?
Yeah.
I'm going to like, what's the term you use normally?
What, gonna like, what?
No, when you're going to like, I don't know, beat somebody
take
up.
Take my earrings off.
Take my earrings off. Yes, I'm going to take my earrings off about being good.
You were in that mode.
Now, are you a miss, a miss, or a... you're not Mrs. What are you? What are you?
Badass. So, yeah, so the other... Badass, exactly. Badass, full stop. I actually wrote in the last 10 days, Miss, M-I-S-S, on a form when I was writing my whole name. And it was a weird sort of experience. My brain almost went, ooh, what's that? And I've noticed that the suffix?
Yeah.
That's been dropped off of my bank cards. But I'm cool with MS. I do remember the stigma at school in that when you teachers that used MS, you were assumed they were lesbians or spinsters.
Or a bit weird.
It's and true. All the young teachers were miss. And, you know, obviously everyone that was married was misses. And now this is where I'm a bit, I guess, a bit flip-floppy in terms of being a feminist in terms. If I got married, because we know I wouldn't get married in traditional terms, I wouldn't change my surname and I wouldn't be a Mrs. I just think, let people be who they are. Like TFL, they're saying hello, everybody, instead of ladies and gentlemen. You know, just be inclusive.
When you are on the tube, though, definitely something you notice as you get older. It's like in the olden days, if you got up from your seat for somebody and like, I don't know, maybe it's for a child, their parent would be like, oh, thank the nice lady, and they check. Well, no, thank you. They go, thank you, miss. Mm-hmm. And then when you're older, they're like, thank you, thanks, the lady. And it's like they change the terms when they thank you on the
really.
Yeah, they do.
They
and
do.
That's how you know you're old, when people say thanks. Say
yeah,
thank
thanks,
the nice
miss,
lady.
Or thank you, lady, isn't
yeah.
it? It's like, oh.
But I think there's actually a bigger point here, which is really, why are we still in any way, shape or form determining women by whether they are married, not married, or uninterested in being married?
Exactly.
And that, for me, I find really frustrating and difficult, because I don't care whether you have decided to spend your life with somebody in particular or not, and I don't care whether you've had a ceremony to announce that. And nobody cares about that when it comes to men. So actually, why do we still do it for women? And I think, rather than maybe having Miss, Mrs., Ms., Mr., Lord, Lady, whatever, can we not just get rid of all of them? I'm going to stop using them as of now.
Whoa. But if I became a lady, as in a baroness, you better know that you'll be calling me Lady Campbell, just for reference.
But even that, where does that come from? You know,
I don't
hierarchical.
Care. I will be coming in with a t-shirt on and I want you ishes to be calling me Lady Campbell.
Okay.
But there's something there. Do you know what? So when people get an OB or an MBE and they're like, oh, I've never, it's so silly. I don't know why I've got it. And then it appears on all their stationery everywhere. You're like,
you know what? That's the goal. Get rid of the suffix at the front and add something to the back.
There we go.
Yes.
High five. So our final story this week is Andy Murray basically showing himself to be the kind of classic and beautiful male feminist that he is this week. So he's being interviewed by a journalist, in which the journalist said, so this guy Sam is the first tennis player to get to a first American player to get to the Wimbledon semi-finals in however many years, and Andy Murray just gave him this death stare and said, first male player, and then rolled his eyes. And it just went absolutely viral, partly because of Judy Murray taking the video, tweeting it out with, that's my boy. She was obviously very proud. But I loved it because it was such a simple and almost automatic reaction. It was like, this is a little bit of sexism here and I'm just going to call it out. And I do that every single time I see it. Nat, did you watch the video? What did you think?
I did. I watched it on repeat and I tweeted it from our account. And what I would say, I don't even think it's him being consciously aware of pointing out sexism. I just think he's programmed to be like, that's just what you've just said to me is incorrect and I'm going to correct you. And because he's in the field and he has respect for brilliant players, when someone says something that's just fundamentally wrong, he's calling it out. Yes, he's calling it out, and he's also, I think he knows the magnitude of what he's doing when he's calling it out, because I think it's something that he hears consistently. But what I would like to see actually is more of a broader conversation around other men doing that in sport, because it happens so often. This is just the first time we're hearing it because of the power of social media.
And the other thing I think is interesting in this is it's about what it means to be a male ally to feminism. And being an ally is kind of like not being necessarily part of the gang, but kind of saying I side with it and I support it. So I'm not a woman, so I can't be a kind of female feminist, but I am an ally to your cause and I get it. And I see it a lot in kind of the work I do with corporates, and you'll go and they'll have a women's network, or they now like to call it a gender network. And I talked to a lot of men and I got a bit eye-rolly and frustrated with them, because I would talk to them and they'd be like, yeah, you know, and I'm part of this network because it's really important for men too. I was like, guys, that's not the idea. Emma, does that annoy you when guys do that?
I definitely am well aware of some people in my industry who probably term themselves male feminists and are a champion of women, but mainly because it gives them an opportunity to speak on the topic. I really loved Andy Murray because, you're right, Nat, the way he called it out was factual. And there was no, like, I'm going to start being a male feminist about this. He was just like, the facts are that is incorrect, and for so long people have brushed over that and not seen that as important. And he made a point of that being, it was important to distinguish that we were talking about male, and, you know, and acknowledging that. So for me, I really like that. It made it just normal to go, that's not okay to dismiss gender like that. So I like this sort of nonchalant way he did it, you know, where it wasn't like, I'm a feminist.
That goes back to the point you made a few weeks ago when we were talking about how do you call out misogyny on Twitter and you use facts. The first way that you discredit anyone when they're saying something is to show them facts. And the facts speak for themselves. It was the first male player. You know, women are not given equality. We are not equal anywhere in the world, regardless of what men want to say. But you have to show them the facts. So I just want to say, the gender network thing, I don't get it. If it's called a gender network, gender is both genders. What? I don't get it.
So the idea is that women's networks are rebranding to gender networks because they don't want to be anti-men. I can't even begin to get... That's a whole other argument for another day, because it drives me up the wall.
So I was just confused. My brain was sort of slowly processing and I was like, I don't understand what this thing is. Sorry.
No, it's not worth time or space.
Going back to the reporter who was talking to Andy Murray, do you know what I didn't like? The way he kind of laughed... He didn't go, you're absolutely right, Andy, I'm really sorry. No, the first male, he went, oh yeah. And I was just like,
he was embarrassed.
I'm gonna punch in the face.
Listening to it on repeat, he was embarrassed and he got called out. And in that moment of being not really knowing what to do, that's what he did. But I bet, well, I would hope on reflection, he'd realise. It'd be good if he actually
wrote an article
about it.
Just turn around and go, you're right, I'm really sorry. I have an unconscious sexism because of society, and I'm really sorry, Andy. I don't think the guy's that smart.
He's not that smart.
Oh, where are the smart ones? Oh, my God.
If you know where the smart ones are, you should tell us.
My house.
Send them to Emma's house. Tweet us. Did you think Andy Murray did the right thing? Did he do it in the right way? And could he have made more of a point of it, actually? Could he have made it bigger? Would that have helped? Tweet us and tell us at Badass Women's Hour, HR, at Badass Women's Hour. Coming up now, we have got blogger, Instagrammer, all-round social media guru, Anna Hart, joining us in the studio. And we're going to be asking her all about her life as an Instagram celeb and what we should all be doing to boost our social media profiles.
Badass Women's Hour with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio. She'll get you talking.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour. Three women, 1 hour, all the opinions you can muster, and a whole load of badass here on Talk Radio. I'm Harriet Minter, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. And this week, we are also joined by influencer Anna Hart. She runs One Roof Social, an influencer marketing agency. And she's also the founder, writer, and general badass behind the South Molton Style blog. Anna, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So Hi. Lovely to have you here. So first of all, tell us, what the actual F is an influencer?
That's a fair question. I mean, it is the golden question. Effectively, it's somebody who makes an impact on consumers via digital media. I just came up with that.
That's really good.
How many followers do I need to be an influencer? Is it followers or is it like, how do you measure it?
This is the golden, again, like the massive question is now, it's far more about, it's not how big you are, it's what you've got. So, you know, which is an analogy you can use in several different ways. But effective, for example, if you are, say you have 100,000 followers and I am an umbrella company, you would, say, of 100,000, you might only have 5,000 that live in wet countries where an umbrella is relevant. So therefore, you're not great for that campaign. But equally, there could be someone with 5,000 followers where all of them live in the UK and umbrella is constantly needed throughout 12 months. So that's far better. Mm-hmm. So it's about understanding the demographic of what your followers are. Generally speaking, once you have 1,000 of any demographic, you're interesting from a marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so how did you get into this? Where did you start?
I worked in a very different field. I was working in recruitment, which actually is something I think has been really useful because it's people and it's KPI driven and all of that kind of stuff. But I had an operation and was literally couldn't move for about 2 months and not very good about being bored, so started the blog. I can't tell you why it was called that, why I did it. There was no burning desire. The internet strangely felt anonymous then. It was like the opposite of what it is now.
How long ago was this?
6 years ago. And I did it, I guess, as a creative pursuit, but I didn't even, it was literally a boredom thing. I didn't know anything about fashion. I started it during Fashion Week and didn't know it was Fashion Week. I literally had no idea. And I just circumstantially picked a really good time to do it. I was recruiting for media companies, so digital was starting to come more into play. Mm. Ended up going to work for a client, and then 6 years later, I'm here. So, yeah.
So, whenever we talk to people with, you know, fantastic kind of blogs or Instagram followings, things like that, they're always like, oh, you know, I did a bit of this and I did a bit of that, and then it kind of, there was that. But you did say something really interesting in there that I wanted to pick up on, which was KPIs.
Yeah.
So tell us about what KPIs are, what they mean, and why they're important for digital marketing, because I think this is a bit that nobody talks about.
Stats, data. It's the numbers. I mean, so many influencers sort of push back on this, but what it's going to, it's an advertising platform, whether we like it or not. And I think the influencer industry is a pastime that's accidentally become a profession, and it's still finding its feet. There's various legislations which have come in which are annoying because they're stopping people from exploiting the system on both sides, both as a brand and an influencer. But it means that there are parameters now, and brands are more savvy to the fact of, if we're paying you to do this, we need some substance back, and we need you to produce some statistics to say that we should pay you in the first place. And that's where the KPIs and the stats and all of that really come into play.
So are you actually a bit of a stats geek?
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. Like, yeah, it's my best. Stats are my best friend because they back up everything I do. And if I didn't have that, I mean, there'd be sleepless nights. I wouldn't know because, you know, with the agency, we pay people thousands of pounds to do activity based on how, you know, if that was purely based on what their Instagram appeared to look like, how the hell would I know whether I was getting any return from it? It would be a nightmare. So, yeah.
Emma.
Anna, so you started a blog 6 years ago, and you say that you started off because you were recovering and you're a bit bored. But how have you maintained momentum? Because 6 years is a long time, and I follow you on Instagram like every day. You know, you're regular with your posts; like it's really reliable to see you on my feed. I'm like, how do you maintain that sort of tenacity and keep going and keep going?
Honestly, I just really enjoy it. I think, and it's a passion project for me. I've never wanted to be a full-time blogger because I never wanted to lose the fun aspect. And I think if I was to turn around and make the blog my job, it would become work. Like, yes, it's great. I get paid to do things and get to experience amazing things. But if I didn't have that amazing, if I didn't have work to go to, then I think it would start to feel a little bit too much like a task, which is crazy when you're given these opportunities, which is why part of the reason on a personal side I built the agency to give me that work and play kind of dynamic, but I really enjoy it.
And how did the agency come about, and how long have you had One Roof Social?
One Roof is about 18 months old now. It was born out of having so I ended up working brand side for a couple of companies. And trying to run a successful influencer program or project as a brand was just a nightmare because brands didn't understand some aspects of it and influencers didn't understand the other. So I realised that there was a gap in the market for an agency that came from both sides. So we just try and demuddy the water for people, but essentially it comes down to data. Mm-hmm.
What do you think influencers, so anyone listening to this at home that considers himself an influencer or is thinking about this as a career, because I think that's the reality of the world we're in now. There are young people coming out of school, coming out of college thinking, okay, I'm going to be a YouTuber, I'm going to be a vlogger, a blogger, and all of these different things, not necessarily understanding the fundamentals of business. So what are the three things that influencers need to know or should be thinking about in terms of making this a viable career or business proposition? Because fundamentally, if no one's paying you, it's just a hobby.
Yeah.
So what are the three things?
Those are the things that we come up against all the time. Number one, I would say, do it because you love it and you want to have a blog, not because you want to make money from it. So ask anybody who's been an influencer since sort of the beginning, so we're talking like 6 years beyond, five, 6 years beyond, they have all had other careers and built them up to make it financially viable to get to a point that they have been able to go full time. And that is the biggest thing that I would say. Second thing I would say is don't be expectant. Unfortunately, it was really interesting, actually. We did a survey with One Roof Social where we asked influencers how they calculate their fees, and a massive percentage of them came out and said that they calculate it based on time and effort. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting, so it was a bit like, well, sorry, but if it was any other medium, I don't pay Vogue magazine to build the magazine, that, you know, the amount of time it takes them to put the advert in the paper. So I don't feel that I should have to pay you for the time and effort it takes for you to produce the content that is why I approached you in the first place. So expect to put a lot of time and effort in. Graft, basically. All of us have had to graft. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there's a bit of resentment with these new guys that are coming in who just unfortunately sort of swoop in, and you've got these other influencers who've spent years getting to the point that they're being paid for stuff.
So who are the new guys? What are the influencer battlegrounds?
how long have you got? Essentially, when influencers started, it was heavily linked to the editorial side because you had a lot, and ironically, a lot of editors used it as a way to platform their abilities outside of perhaps what they could do within the magazine, because they may have been a junior features editor and only really got to be able to put 10 top dresses on a page when actually they were really good at other things. So it was used as a portfolio. So it was heavily entwined with the editorial world, so therefore came into a PR world. Once it left PR and became a marketing issue, which effectively is when it came down to being paid for stuff, because the PR teams aren't ones that have
the budgets,
massive budgets. It's marketing teams that do. That's when it all started to change.
Can you give us an example of a new influencer?
We were talking earlier about Brooklyn Beckham, weren't we?
Well, Brooklyn Beckham's a really interesting one on so many levels. And like, really, I mean, I can remember him being born quite vividly. I remember I was getting ready for school and dad saying to me, and dad complaining to me, oh, the Beckhams have named him after a hotel, kind of like, or whatever. And now I just find it really weird because I actually saw him at an event a couple of months ago and he was ordering a beer and I was like, this is just wrong. Like, you're a child. What are you doing? But looking at him quite simply, he holds influence and that can't be ignored. And yes, it's frustrating. And yes, ultimately, that's because of his parentage and like all of that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to it, he holds influence within a market. And he's proven that because they've done relative placements. You look at his brother, who was the front kids guy for Calvin, Burberry.
Yeah,
and children's wear the product lifted 30% like with him. So okay, there is an influence.
Different example, Emily Clarkson.
Interesting.
No, little following, just a surname, could be anyone's surname, to be honest. Front cover, national publication.
Yeah, some declarations deal to make. That, I think, it's a different type of influencer because that's a talent influencer, whereas part of the wonderful side, like part of the love, oh, it's interlinked with celebrity. What the bits that I find really interesting in the influence market are people who literally set it up in their bedroom in Norfolk and liked lip liners and then 10 years later are fronting for Mulberry. Like that's the kind of stuff that I think's more relatable and those people have followers who follow that journey.
Yeah.
And I think that makes someone like me go, oh, if they can do it, then that's more relatable.
Okay, so we're going to keep Anna with us and her wisdom for our next section, which is, of course, our badass balls ups, where we answer your problems using our combined over 100 years of experience to, well, hopefully give you some better solutions than you already have, maybe not. But we'll be looking at that. And in that, we're going to be looking at how you get the most out of your weekends, what to do when you're freaking out about a smear test, and how do you dump a mentor. So stay tuned for that.
Badass Women's Hour with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio. She'll get you talking.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour. Three women, 1 hour, all the opinions you can muster, and a whole load of badass here on Talk Radio. I'm Harriet Minter, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. And this week, we are also joined by social media star, influencer, and founder of One Roof Social, Anna Hart. Thank you for staying with us, Anna. So this is our Badass Balls Up section, where we try and use our combined wisdom and all the mistakes we've made and have not yet learned from to help you out. And we have some really actually quite fun and interesting and just different questions this week. I'm really loving what you are sending us. And if you want to send us your questions again, you can always do so on our Twitter at Badass Women's Hour, HR at Badass Women's Hour, or on our Instagram or Facebook, all the socials. Come find us and we can answer your problems. Nat, what have we got first this week?
So this one comes from Emily and she's asking about time. Her thing is that she spends the working week obviously working, and she tries to make the most of her evenings by going to the gym and hanging out with friends, and then it gets to the weekend and then she's catching up with people, with life, with going to all of these things that you have to go to if you live in London, or have to go to if you live in any big city, because if you don't, you know, you have FOMO, fear of missing out, and she feels burnt out come Monday, and where she's then got to do it all over again. So her question is, how do I get in control of my weekends? Do I need to be out? Is it okay to just hang at home on the sofa?
Yes. I mean, yeah. It is always okay to hang at home on the sofa. Anna, you've got quite a kind of busy, like, I would imagine, event-packed life, right?
Yeah, I guess I do, yeah.
How do you find that balance?
I have absolutely no problem having a very close relationship with my sofa. Like, I think it's really important that I really... If you, I'm of the camp where I'm like, the mind's a muscle, so if you work it out, you need to rest it. Mm. And therefore, if it's Sundays for me are time off. I don't drink on Sundays anymore because I spent years walking into the office on Monday and just being a wreck.
Yeah.
So it's not worth it. I don't drink. I'm more of a go out on Fridays now rather than Saturdays, because then I've got 2 days to get over it. But also... Yeah, it is a spiral though. It's really hard, especially when you live in a city and there's just so much on offer. And you feel, with social media and stuff, you feel like you should be Instagramming your ice cream like the whole time. Mm. But I have no problem. And actually, it's strangely almost becoming cool to go, oh, I'm not drinking, or oh, no, I'm just staying in. Yeah. And the number of people, it's like this weird taboo. The minute you say it, other people go, oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. So Emma and I are both off the booze at the moment. Emma, like, because she actually prefers it, me because I realised that actually my liver was about to pack up and die. But the other thing that I think is really interesting is I'm doing this thing at the moment called The Artist's Way, which is all about how you get your creativity back when you're a bit burnt out. And it suggests that every week you have something called a date. So you have a date with yourself where you go and do something that in some way feeds your creativity. And they're really clear in the book. They're like, this does not mean that you have to go to an exhibition or a gallery or something that feels very worthy. If you love that, do it. But actually, anything that's just going to make you feel a bit lighter and happier, date with yourself. It's in the diary and you cannot miss it. And I think it is the best thing I've done. Emma, how do you do it?
I think I'm the worst person for time off, because I just feel like my Mondays and Fridays are just so full on. Like, there's so much going on. There's client emails. Like, you're kind of getting attacked from all angles. And then when it comes to Saturday and Sunday, I love the fact that I don't have to be anywhere at a certain time. I don't have to respond to anything. I can ignore emails. But then that's when I want to use the time to, I don't know, think about stuff or do all the stuff that you need that sort of longer concentration span. So I'm always torn with, I probably need to lie on the sofa all day and do nothing, versus I really want to learn about this thing or do that.
You are actually the worst person for relaxing. You are the worst. Really, you went to, Emma went to Ibiza for 4 days and came back and said, look, I've made a whole new website for my business.
Oh my God.
No.
Let's add some clarity to this. We said, send us a picture of your lovely view and you sunbathing. And she sent us a picture and she was inside and the picture was of her laptop and we were like,
that sounds like
get
me
outside.
When I relax, I then get all this creativity and my mind,
I'm
my
exactly
mind
the same
awake. I'm too twitchy, I can't do anything.
I'm the same, but when I'm at home, so our working weeks just it's a mush. So sometimes the weekend's working and sometimes midweek it's not working. It's just one big sort of, it's 7 days of 7 daysness. But if I do have a weekend and I've managed to cram sort of working into a week, I will happily hang on my sofa. I think I say it every week on this show. I sit in my pants, I get the kettle chips, I get the red wine, and I find whatever on TV or not, just listening to music. You know, open up the windows, the sun's out.
Or just don't listen to anything. Silence is amazing when you're trying to relax. But
And especially if you're an introvert, having that sort of nothingness is good. But if it's a whole day outing, then, you know, to break it up, there'll be something going on. But yeah, do it. Just take time off.
I find it difficult to blur I have a vague rule, which is I don't see colleagues on weekends, because otherwise you don't ever mentally separate the working week from the weekend. But it's really hard with what I do because the lines get so blurred. And ultimately, there's some stat with the number of friendships people make via work, which obviously means there's some kind of carryover. But I try really hard not to see people that I've got stuff actively going on with work during the weekends.
Yeah.
Good tip. So this is another problem from a reader. So she didn't want to be named, which is fine, but she says, I know that I need a smear test and I'm overdue. My doctors keep sending me letters. I know I should go. I know it's really important, but I hate them. I find them really uncomfortable and painful. I don't want to do it. Do we have any tips?
Oh, this is a really tricky one. I think it's definitely a mind over matter thing. I think we can get really caught up in ourselves. We can get caught up in the fact that, you know, we're going to just basically be half naked with a stranger. But whenever I've got really comfortable with it now, and that has purely been about challenging my mindset. So when I felt worked up about it, going, hang on a minute, you're just having a smear test. I quite often, when I'm doing anything medical like that, I quite often think about all the people who are also having medical conditions, but they're in a worse state for me. You know, whenever you are in hospital, there are other people who are having some really serious things, just to try and give me some perspective on the situation. And also just to as well go to myself, this is like 30 seconds, 10 minutes out of my life, but will make a big difference to my health in the long run. So it is really a mindset thing for me. But I do find every time you go, if you try and associate more positive emotions, it gets better. If you associate anything negative or high anxiety, every time you come to that situation, your body, your mind builds on that. So trying to diffuse that emotion is the most important thing you can do, for sure.
I think so, two things for me. So one, it's less about the process and it's more about finding the time. So I am the worst one for booking in anything, any form of medical checkup. So it's getting over that barrier. And then, yeah, once you're there, it's putting a positive spin on it. And I think the NHS could help us. I mean, you could make the space that you're about to check my bits in much nicer. Give me a glass of Prosecco. Give me a glass of champagne. Give me some nibbles. Do you know what I mean? If you're digging around down there,
that would
relax
you.
If you give me a glass of something, I'd be happy. I feel like they do this in other countries. You get an experience. It's not, you don't go to, I'm pretty sure there are places.
I'm just raising my eyebrows at whether or not, like, Spain, you get tapas and a car. Yeah.
But the places you go to, I have friends that have spoken about having babies in other countries, and they have, you know, these birthing hospitals where you're looked after and you're greeted, and it's part of a health experience versus the way I think the process that we've got into, where it's not a health experience, it's kind of a health nightmare, almost.
I do think there is something about taking responsibility for your own environment. So if you know, and I, for years and years and years, I absolutely hated going for smear tests, and I found them very painful and really was just didn't enjoy the experience at all. And then I really took control of it. So actually, if I went in and I didn't like the nurse, I would say, I'd just be really honest and say, I'm really sorry, I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now. Is there someone else that I can do this with? I would tell them in advance. I'd say, I'm really sorry, I don't want to be difficult, but I am one of those people that finds this experience very scary. So if you could possibly just give me some time, some space, that would be much appreciated. And I really listened to the instructions that they gave me. So as you're doing it, you'll find they'll say, you know, breathe in at this point, breathe out here, relax this here. Actually, if you really listen and focus on doing what they tell you to do, your body can respond to it and it can make it better. Emily, what do you think? Is it something, are you on top of it? Do you go the whole time?
I'm pretty vigilant actually. But I think, to be honest, for me, it's about perspective. We're not doing this for fun. We're not getting sent these letters because they fancy sticking something inside us. Like, it's because it's proven that it will flag cancer, and that's the other extreme. And on the other side, I think, in global terms, there's a lot of NHS bashing at the moment, and I totally get it. As somebody who massively relies on the NHS, queues are frustrating, processes are frustrating, they're not glamorous. But equally, we are so privileged from a global point of view. And you've got to look at the other extreme and kind of go, there are an awful, huge amount of women who don't have access to this. And let's be honest, they die. Okay. So I mean, I hate it. And I have a very close friend. And often when people say very close friend, but I promise you it's not me, who has the funniest story where she got so nervous, she basically broke wind at a really, really difficult, awful moment. And I always think of that story because, like, at least I'm not her. But I just go.
I just want to challenge you on that, though. Not challenge you, but just say, I think something that the NHS could do. So there's no reason why they can't play music in the background, or, you know, make the bedding not tissue. It's small things that would make us comfortable doing something that we have to do, but they don't.
Okay, let's move on to our next question. Final question, Emma.
Oh, this is a good one. So this is from Victoria. She said, I had a mentor in the early stages of my career, but now I've outgrown their support and advice. But how do I politely tell them that I no longer need them to mentor me?
How do you ghost your mentor? Is that
what we're
saying?
Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah.
Anna, have you ever had a mentor that you've had to say, do you know what, our time here is done?
I can't imagine ever not needing a mentor. Like, I just, I don't feel like I, for me, I don't pay a mentor, but there are people in my life that I 100% need for specific situations. But I guess thinking about it, I would probably try and refer them to somebody who I felt they could help, and almost sort of say, you've helped me so much and thank you. I've got to the point that I wanted to when we first met, and now I think you could really help this person, because then it's not, you're complimenting their services but also offloading it onto someone else.
Nice, I like
that. I think, yeah, maybe.
Nat, what would you do?
Well, I think the other side of this is that mentors are extremely busy. So you just saying, look, I think that we've done as much as we can here. I need some time just to focus on some things. They might just be really glad of having the time, but equally you should never go into a mentor relationship thinking it's forever. You should have set clear boundaries. Let's try meeting once a month over 6 months and then always review. These ad hoc sort of mentor things don't work for anyone, so be a bit more organized when you start a mentorship relationship, and then have no problem just saying, look, you know, I'm just going to focus, thank you very much, because you're not paying them fundamentally. They are giving you something, and giving you their time, so respect them enough to be honest.
Yeah.
Emma, you mentor a lot of people. Have you ever been dumped?
I think I've been phased out. I kind of feel like there's ebbs and flows. And also, I think as well, there's never been, you know, I have like different mentors, different people I call on, and I would never necessarily dump them, because I think even though I evolve as a person and my knowledge evolves, they still can give me a very different perspective on things. And I really value that. Whenever I have a challenge in life or business, I find that talking to lots of different people and getting lots of different perspectives then helps me solve the problem for myself. That's kind of how I never seek someone to just purely advise me. I kind of seek people for their perspectives. So I don't think I'd perhaps dump one, but yeah, I've probably been phased out. Yeah,
maybe phase them out slowly, or pass them on to someone else. That's our advice. As ever, if you want our advice and wisdom, you can tweet us at Badass Women's Hour, or find us on Instagram or Facebook, all the socials. Send us your problems, because we really love to help. Big thank you to the amazing Anna Hart, who's joined us today with her
thanks,
brilliant
Emma.
Wisdom. So coming up in our next section, we are talking about our backdated badass, a woman from history that you absolutely need to know about, and this one is from Down Under.
Badass Women's Hour with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio. She'll get you talking.
Okay. Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour. Three women, 1 hour, all the opinions we can muster and a whole load of badass here on Talk Radio. I'm Harriet Minter and I'm joined by my co-hosts Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. And this is the part of the show where we talk about a backdated badass, a woman from history that you absolutely need to know about. And introducing this week's backdated badass is the fantastic Emma Hart. And Emma is also actually going to be on a panel with us next week at the NED. If you want to come along, if you're interested, you can tweet us at Badass Women's Hour, HR, and we will make sure you're on the guest list. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Emma, you're the founder and CEO of Push PR. But who are you talking about this week?
I am talking about the brilliant Nancy Wake, fundamentally an amazing war hero.
Tell us what she did.
So she was born in 1912 in New Zealand and quickly moved to Australia. She hot-footed it over at the tender age of 16 to London with £200 inheritance in her pocket, and studied journalism, moved to France, and then became a really integral leading figure in the French Resistance. Throughout the time that she was alive, and she actually died in 2011 at age 98, she had become known as someone who completely foxed the Gestapo. She became known as the White Mouse. She had a book written about her by Sebastian Faulks, called Charlotte Grey, which I'm sure many people are aware of.
I didn't realise that was about her.
Yeah, and then went on to make a film, and Kate Blanchett played her. So I think she's pretty awesome, all in all.
Why was she called the White Mouse?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it was basically about the fact that she just literally was here, there and everywhere, and she was pretty unrecognisable in the sense of flitting from one place to another, and she had a £5 million price on her head from the Gestapo, where everyone was desperate to get hold of her. But I suppose when you think about the characteristics of a mouse, they're very quick and pretty hard to pin down.
And I love this thing. When she was asked about her tactics and how she got away with it, she says, "A little powder and a little drink on the way, and I'd pass their posts and wink and say, 'Do you want to search me?' God, what a flirtatious little bastard I was."
What a legend.
She just is a complete legend. I was looking into sort of various other things she did, and whilst I wouldn't condone it or encourage it, she actually sold her war medals to fund her gin and tonic lifestyle later on in life. And when someone questioned her, she said, "But I'm probably going to go to hell and they'll melt anyway." So it's that kind of can't take it with you when you're gone mentality.
I love her. It's the feistiness that really comes through reading anything about her. And, you know, she's also noted to say, "Put the men to shame by their cheerful spirit and strength of character," in when she was talking to others about training. And she was also a good and fast shot. So I always, whenever someone does the backdated badass stories, I always try and sort of bring them to mind, and I've got this vision of her. You know, she's got a little pistol on her somewhere, she's sassy, you know, she's walking around head held high, and we've done a few spies, and it's making me more and more aware of the role that women played in covert operations during both the First and Second World Wars.
Yeah, I also love the fact that this is one of my life goals, where she ends up being a resident at the Stafford Hotel in St James's Place near Piccadilly. Now, Margaret Thatcher was a resident of the Ritz Hotel. I'm like, stuff the care home. I want to be living in a hotel. And every morning she was downstairs sipping her first gin and tonic of the day. God knows how many she had that day. But I'm like, that is my life goal right there.
Love it.
I'm hoping for the Ned.
Okay, yes, we'll aim for the Ned, Emma. We'll move in next Wednesday and never leave.
So she finally died when she was 98, and her obituary was entitled "The Socialite Who Killed a Nazi with Her Bare Hands." So this kind of both sides of her, this sort of gin and tonic drinking, lots of kind of glamour and flirtation, but she was tough. Yeah. Really tough.
Yeah, there's a great quote, actually, from one of her the people that she worked with in the French Resistance, should I say. And it says, "She's the most feminine woman I know until the fight starts. Then she's like five men." And I think that's the really key thing, is that, you know, we talk about feminism and sometimes people think, well, it has to be that you're not feminine to be a feminist. And this is actually, you know, she was the ultimate feminist and, you know, really, really worked the room.
Fantastic. That is Nancy Wake. Thank you so much, Emma, for sharing her with us today. If you have a backdated badass or a woman from history that you really think we need to know about and we should be sharing with the rest of the world, then do tell us. Tweet us at Badass Women's Hour, HR at Badass Women's Hour. Or if you want to be on the show, like, let us know that too. We're always looking for more brilliant women that we can talk to and about. But as ever, we're coming towards the end of our show now, and we like to leave you with a little something to think about for the next 7 days. A badass principle, if you will, to live your life by in the coming week. Nat, what is it this week?
This one's breaking slightly with tradition in that it's not the same format, but I'm going with passionate influence. And it was inspired by Anna and her, I guess, talking about how she's built a career and a business out of being an influencer, but not just being the influencer sharing this stuff, but also an actual business that enables both influencers and brands to maximize the relationship they have together. So for me, the passionate bit is figuring out the thing that you really, really, really love. And then, yeah, share it on every single platform and medium. But it starts with caring. And that was her number one tip. Love the thing that you do. So I'm going with passionate influence.
Emma, what do you think passionate influence is? How do you reflect it?
I think it's true. I think that passion is really contagious and infectious. And I think that people really warm to you when you're passionate about something. It doesn't matter what that is, but passion always comes through. I think we can just tell as human beings when somebody's doing something for, I don't know, an ulterior motive, when it's driven just by money or just by fame or, you know, and I just don't think we're drawn to that. So I think you're right. And also it just makes life much more interesting when you're, like, staying true to the things you're really passionate and excited about, for sure.
So I run lots of training courses, and when I do, one of the things I get the women on those courses to do is spend 5 minutes just talking about things they love and are good at. And they're not allowed to talk about things they love but they're bad at, or things they're good at but they don't really enjoy, just things they love and are good at. And when they do this, you see the person they're talking to, and the person that's listening is sort of thinking, oh, I want to help with that. Oh, I know something that can do with that. Oh, you could take this further. And we forget what huge influence we can have on other people when we just share what it is we're passionate about and why we actually think we're quite an important part of it. And we've been taught as kind of kids not to brag, not to be arrogant, not to talk about everything. But actually, when you share what you're passionate about and why you're good at it, you can really influence and change other people's minds. So that for me is passionate influence this week. As ever, if you want to get in touch with us in between shows, because why wouldn't you? You can find us on Twitter at Badass Women's Hour, HR at Badass Women's Hour, or on Instagram or Facebook, all the socials on the same name. Or you can talk to us individually. I'm at Harriet Minter, Nat.
At Nat D. Campbell.
And Emma.
At Emma Sexton.
And we'll be back here again next week, same time, same place on Talk Radio.
Badass Women's Hour with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio. She'll get you talking.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.